Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutane Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Astyatya Desatarine. I thought of addressing during the course of this weekend a particular theme, as I spoke yesterday evening and again this morning, along the same theme. The importance of hearing, or even more specifically, our process is a process of descending knowledge, and with descending knowledge, descending mercy. So how to receive descending mercy that comes in the form of such a very special, rare, and valuable experience in life, or instance in life, where we're receiving instruction. In the morning class, we were discussing the Gyane Prayasa Udapasya Namante Eva verse from 10th Canto Srimad Bhagavatam, wherein Brahma is describing the means of an ordinary Kali Yuga-ized conditioned soul achieving the stage of perfection. Someone who doesn't have knowledge, doesn't have the prerequisite of any kind, and yet with that apparent disqualification become the most qualified person. It's through the medium of hearing. And it's there's qualifiers in hearing. Prabhupada would use the word sometimes ardent hearing, or eagerness to hear. The sages of Naimisharanya were very eager to hear from Sutta Goswami, and any other successful hearing has eagerness. Rupa Goswami teaches this. Utsaha, enthusiasm, eagerness. And the beginning entry point of, or application point of that hearing, or that eagerness, is hearing. One of the early lessons in Krishna consciousness that I can recall, many, but one very prominent one I want to present right now, and that is Prabhupada's statement. What is the, he asked a question and then answered the question. What is the secret to success in spiritual life? Can't tell you because it's a secret. But then he shared the secret. He shared the secret in a very personal way. The secret to success, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, is to accept the instruction of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. So I'm going to expand on that very powerful statement. What's giving life to the body is the spirit soul. Minus the spirit soul, there's no life. There may be a body, But if the soul leaves, it's dead. Similarly, that which gives life to this human form is the instruction of the spiritual master. When the instruction of the spiritual master is taken as the very life and soul, say it in reverse, without the instruction of the spiritual master, there's no life to life. There's no real life to life. The real life to life is like the soul is to the body. The life and soul is the instruction of the spiritual master. And one who takes the instruction of the spiritual master as one's life and soul, that means it drives everything. In the verse that we were discussing this morning, the verse spoken by Lord Brahma mentions three things: tanuvan manobhir, the body, words, and mind, dedicated unto one thing, the messages that are heard from qualified souls, from Krishna or Krishna's intimate representatives, dedicating oneself to those messages. Naturally, it goes to the message deliverer, because without the message deliverer, we're not going to have the message. But it's the message, because the message is our life and soul. We pay attention, maximum attention, to that which gives life to our life, that which can elevate us out of material existence and again into the realm of Krishna. In one class or explanation of that verse, Prabhupada wrote very pleasantly and very sweetly that very soon Krishna will again accept you. Krishna is more than ready to accept us. We're less than ready to be accepted because we're so busy in our little God projects, our little program of trying to be the Lord of the kingdom of God or some piece of it, at least the material portion, the one quarter portion, or some little piece of the one quarter portion, our little God project. We're very invested in that. Too much. Attached. Addicted. Sickly addicted to our little God projects in this temporary material world of suffering. But the instruction of the spiritual master is the means to get out of that stuck position and into the realm of freedom. As free as a soul can be, because constitutionally we're a tiny part of Krishna. That means constitutionally we're the servant of Krishna, but in a relationship of love, being the servant of the beloved is lovely. It's happiness. We're happy to have that bondage of love as opposed to the bondage of illusion that says we're independent. The instruction of the spiritual master binds us to the spiritual master. It's the link. It's the connection. And it becomes, for one who is serious in spiritual life, it becomes our life and soul. That which, the engine that pulls the whole train, or the propelling force that carries our life to wherever Krishna wants to take us, because his dear servant's instruction is our life and soul. That verse was quoted by Srila Prabhupada, referred to by Srila Prabhupada, in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 41. I heard it coming. The mouth went. And the mother knew what came next. Ah! I had to take birth again. Ah! Makes my mind go blank when I hear that blood curdling sound of vibration. I would never make a good grahasta. Prabhupada, save me. Prabhupada described when he was in Vrindavan, he had the instruction of his spiritual master. You know what the instruction was, to go to the Western countries, the English-speaking parts of the world, and deliver the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he knew he had to do that. We have a screwdriver at the... Maybe we can just do this. Microphone has its own mind. He knew he had to go to the Western countries and fulfill the order of his spiritual master. He received the instruction twice. But what was he feeling? He was feeling the weight of the instruction, but he was also feeling unqualified. So he was preparing, and one of the things that he was preparing was his translation of the first canto of Bhagavatam and his translation of Bhagavad Gita. He was publishing his first translation of the Bhagavatam. Can you play baseball somewhere else? Or not sit in the front row? Maybe it's cricket, not baseball. He was preparing his translation and commentary of Bhagavad Gita, and he came to this verse, Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, Ekeha Kuru Nandana. And that verse is speaking of very singular, Ekeha Kuru Nandana, intelligence that's very singular. Those who are on this path, the path of Buddhi Yoga, their intelligence is fixed. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he explains, how does one get that instead of the other kind? Bahu Shaka, many-branched intelligence. That's what we're accustomed to in our Western vernacular. Is called splayed out or spaced out or not focused or agitated in mind. So how does one become, how does one receive this? Krishna gives it. Dadami buddhiyogam tam. What's the verse? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam. Dadami buddhiyogam tam. Yenamam upiyantite. Another very important verse in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna gives it. Krishna gives buddhi. Buddhi is spiritual intelligence, not the other kind, not the material kind. The material kind is how to get sense gratification and make all kinds of plans to get sense gratification. And there are universities that train that material intelligence up, how to arrange for sense gratification. You get a degree in how to arrange for sense gratification and earn a living doing it. So you can maintain your sense gratification through career. This is another kind of intelligence. It's how to reach Krishna intelligence. Yenamam upiyantite. How to reach Krishna intelligence. Krishna gives it. And who does Krishna give that to? Krishna gives that to those who are satata yuktanam. They're always engaged. Bhajatam. Priti. Purvakam. With complete love and affection and devotion, to that person Krishna gives. How does one qualify oneself for that? Because the honest fact is, we have different interests besides that one interest. How does one come to that position? The answer is, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur supplies, the instruction of the spiritual master. One who takes shelter of the instruction of the spiritual master and internalizes that instruction of the spiritual master and makes the instruction of the spiritual master one's life and soul. That's the key that opens the door that gets you out of that stuck position where all we know is our selfishness. And different varieties, even if it's like, you know, trying to do something nice for other people, there's still the what's in it for me selfishness dimension, at least, in our attempts to be selfless in service. It's the key that unlocks that door, that gets one to the other side of the stuck position, in jail, in Durga's prison, in the material situation of life, the instruction of the spiritual master, making that one's life and soul. Srila Prabhupada made that his life and soul. He said when he read that commentary, he was writing his Bhagavad Gita commentary, and he read that passage, it struck him. And he knew, I can't procrastinate anymore. I can't simply say I'm not qualified, I'm not ready. It doesn't matter. I must do it. And that, in essence, that statement by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur catapulted Srila Prabhupada across the Atlantic Ocean to America. Such a powerful message. We're deeply indebted to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And we're deeply indebted to Prabhupada for receiving that message as his life and soul. It wasn't that he was not committed to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was very humble. Recently heard a lecture where Prabhupada was saying, before coming to America, he went to Mayapur and he prayed to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda in the Holy Dham. I had to take birth again. He prayed to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, please give your mercy because how will I possibly carry this out? Mission impossible. I'm this tiny speck. Unqualified. Even after hearing this Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he didn't lose his humility. He maintained his humility. And in maintaining his humility, he felt he needed mercy. And because he felt he needed mercy, he was pleading for mercy. And he received mercy. He became empowered by that deep faith, despite feelings of humility. we may feel, appropriately, humility. And although feeling humility, we still have some instruction to carry out. And that instruction is our life and soul. It can carry us beyond our limitations if we take shelter of it properly. So descending mercy, this is the message, the theme. Descending mercy comes into our life through that medium of the greatly fortunate opportunity to receive some instruction. We should, however challenging that instruction might be, please consider yourself very fortunate to receive some instruction. So when some instruction comes. And there's some instructions that are universal. One of them we know from Bhagavad Gita. Control the mind. Give me something else to do, please. From whatever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, bring the mind back under the control of the self. Chant with undivided attention. Try it. It's an instruction for every one of us. Don't, you know, not just it's meant for me or it's meant for him or her. It's meant for every one of us. It's for instruction for every one of us. And taking instruction as your life and soul, and what happens? You realize you can't do it. You keep trying. You can't do it. Keep trying. You realize on your own effort alone, you can't do it. So then what do? You do what Prabhupada did. Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, please give your mercy. We become dependent. It's the medium of receiving descending mercy in life. And it's that the descending mercy that will carry us beyond our limitations, beyond this material atmosphere, into the spiritual atmosphere, into the internal potency, through that medium of the instruction of the spiritual master, or Krishna. Because the instruction of the spiritual master is nothing other than the instruction of Krishna. Say it the other way around. The instruction of Krishna is carried by the spiritual master. So the spiritual master is just giving Krishna's instruction. Here's Prabhupada's way of describing. Sometimes, Prabhupada would say, people would say, Swamiji, Arjuna, he achieved spiritual perfection because he could directly speak with Krishna. And Krishna directly spoke with him. I'll never have that opportunity, Swamiji. So I guess I just resign myself to being, you know, a conditioned soul forever. I'll never have that opportunity. And Prabhupada would say, no. Because, and here's why no. When the spiritual master speaks, the words of Krishna, that is Krishna speaking. It's not the spiritual master is Krishna, but the spiritual master representing Krishna speaks Krishna's message. It's Krishna speaking. It's not mechanical, like here's a microphone, there's the amplifier, we have this system of speakers, and the voice is coming out of the speaker. So the speaker is not speaking my voice. The amplifier is amplifying, the sound is coming. It's my voice. But when the spiritual master speaks, surrender unto Krishna. There's another instruction for all of us. Surrender unto Krishna. That's Krishna speaking. It's third person. It's not surrender unto me. It's surrender unto Krishna. I'm now repeating what I've heard from my spiritual master. When the spiritual master says, surrender unto Krishna, and Krishna says, surrender unto me, their speaking is non-different. I've shared this before, but in Mayapur, one time Srila Prabhupada was lecturing on the beginning verses of Chaitanya Charitamrita, And one of the classes he was speaking on this point, he repeated it three times. I'll repeat it two more times. When Krishna says, surrender unto me, and the spiritual master says, surrender unto Krishna, their speaking is non-different. It is Krishna speaking. And then he said it again. The spiritual master says, surrender unto Krishna. Krishna says, surrender unto me. Their speaking is non-different. It's Krishna speaking. He only got a few more words out, and he went into a trance right in front of us. He was seated like this. He was so absorbed. I mean, I don't know how to describe other than what I saw. He was so absorbed in what he said. He was internalizing so much the message. His eyes closed. The muscles of his face relaxed and became slackened. And he was in trance. And his body was moving like a tree in the breeze, like this. And we didn't know what to do. What do you do when your spiritual master goes in trance right in the middle of a Bhagavatam class? So we just sat there stunned. And after a very long minute or so, one devotee picked up mridanga, stood up, very softly started chanting Hare Krishna. And after a few Hare Krishna mantras, Prabhupada opened his eyes, looked around the room, stood up and left the Vyasasana, and that was the end of class. One morning in Sridharmayapur. Just on this one point, the instruction of the spiritual master being not different than Krishna's instruction, it is Krishna speaking through the speaker system, through the mouth of the spiritual master. When it's repeating the message of disciplic succession, that's what it is. The instruction of the spiritual master carries the full mercy of Krishna when it's transparently transmitted. And one who receives it that way receives Krishna's mercy. Even if one is, rightly so, feeling not qualified to receive it, to act upon it, to attain it, to like be that message, like control the mind, to surrender to Krishna, but you take it as your life and soul. Somehow Krishna wants this. Somehow, by his mercy, it must be fulfilled. And there's so much empowerment that it can carry one beyond any human limitation, any frailty, shortcoming, conditioning, impurity. So powerful. Descending mercy carries us to the other side. So one of those instructions is surrender. Surrender unto Krishna. What does that mean? What's the internal meaning of that? Because, you know, we can think of surrender to Krishna, but when a pure devotee surrenders to Krishna, what is that? So from our South Indian yantra, I'll do a little sharing. There were, amongst the disciples of Ramanujacharya, there were several that were most prominent, and two of them that one hears their names again and again is Kuresh and Dasarathi. Kuresh was called Kuresh because he was the king of the Kuru province, thus Kuru Isha or Kuresh. He was a king. He was powerful and opulent and magnanimous with his wealth, along with his wife, his queen. But his position was so humble, skipping some details, when Lakshmi, the deity in the temple, understood from the pujari that Koresh was a nearby king who's, it was a creaking sound in the evening time. And Lakshmi asked the pujari, "What's that?" She said, "Oh, that's Koresh's door, his gate. Because in the morning, when the sun rises, he opens his gate. And whatever wealth he has, anybody in his whole kingdom can come, and whatever it is that they're asking for to his capacity, he gives them until the sun sets, closes the gate." Every day, that's what he does. That's his service. He's so charitable, so magnanimous. Lakshmi said, "I want to meet this person. Can you arrange for him to come?" Lakshmi wanted to meet him. You know that expression, act in such a way the Lord will want to see you rather than trying to see him. That was Koresh. Lakshmi wanted to see him. So the message was passed to Koresh, and Koresh felt humiliated. Not like, "Yay, Lakshmi wants to see me." He was feeling, "What a pitiable personality I am. I'm so proud of my charitable nature that just because of these mundane activities of helping people on the platform of the body, Goddess of Fortune wants to see me just because she knows how proud and puffed up I am. This is despicable." And said to his wife, "Let's get rid of this wealth and kingdom and big house and worldly opulence. Let's just go to Sri Rangam and take shelter of serving the devotees in Sri Rangam." So he didn't go see Lakshmi. Instead, within 24 hours, he gave everything, his whole kingdom, to the Brahmanas, Vaishnavas, and some portion of it was left to serve the deity, wealth of the deity. And by the evening of the next day, he was gone with his wife, Andal, heading for Sri Rangam. In the course of travel, they traveled through a jungle area, and Andal was very afraid. She told Krishna, "I'm very afraid." She said, "Andal, do you still have something of material value in your possession?" She said, no, I gave away everything. All I have is this golden bowl to take care of your meals." She said, "Aha, let me see that golden bowl." Because of fear of losing this possession, you're afraid that somebody may come and steal it from you or harm you in some way to get it. "Let's get rid of this." He just threw it into the forest. So now all your fears will be gone. "Let's go to Sri Rangam." And that way he entered Sri Rangam with nothing. One cloth. He and his wife. Brilliant scholar. He was so brilliant, so his clarity was so significant. You may know this description that he memorized the entire Bodhayanavritti in the course of their travels. When those who had a copy, the only remaining copy, came and took it from them, he had memorized it from reading it once and sat down and wrote it again. His own copy, fresh copy. Brilliant scholar. So he went to Ramanujacharya and asked him for the internal meaning of the final instruction that Krishna gave to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita. We know that verse. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam raja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishami ma suchaha. Ramanujacharya said, "Supposing I give you the answer, what good will that do? You'll have some knowledge. But one who has knowledge can easily just become proud. Oh, look at this knowledge that I have. And it will never enter your heart in any case unless you're truly humble. You're a brilliant scholar, but scholarship won't accomplish understanding the internal meaning of Krishna's final instruction in Bhagavad Gita. You need to become perfectly humble. You, a former king, for 1 year, with your wife, maintain yourself by Madhukari. Then come back and see me. He took the instruction to heart. Not just do the activity, but enter into the mood of full, humble service. He did that. Not only the activity, but the mood. At the end of 1 year, Ramanujacharya instructed him in the internal meaning of that last instruction of Krishna to Bhagavan, to Arjuna. The other very prominent disciple of Ramanujacharya, Dasarathi, he heard Ramanujacharya instructed Krish. He wanted to go and ask Ramanujacharya. And Ramanujacharya didn't give the same answer or same response. He said, you go to Gostipurna, he'll give you the answer. And Gostipurna was several days away journey. So he went several days journey to Gostipurna. And Gostipurna said the same thing. What good is scholarship? You're renowned, brilliant scholar. But what happens when persons gain increased knowledge, when they're brilliantly scholarly? They become proud. And when pride swells in the heart, everything becomes destroyed. No good at all. I would be doing you a disservice to instruct you in that internal meaning of Bhagavad Gita. You stay here for 6 months and just do menial service. Then I'll consider instructing you. He was happy. 6 months, not a day, a week, a few weeks, 6 months. Just menial servant. At the end of 6 months, Gostipurna said, very good. You go back and ask Ramanujacharya for the answer to your question. So he received an instruction from Gostipurna, so he went back to Sri Ranga. The very same hour that he arrived, to now with Gostipurna's instruction, to request Ramanujacharya for the instruction to the message. Before he even got the question out, Mahapurna's daughter arrived, and she had one of these daughter-in-law stories to tell Ramanujacharya. Oh, my in-laws. Those of you who are married, you know this one. I'm staying, and no matter what I do, however much service I do, no matter how well I try to do it, they're never satisfied. I'm doing all this menial service, and all they do is criticize and complain. It's not good enough, and I don't know what to do. Just the older version of what the children do. Ramanujacharya turned to Dasarathi and said, you go, you accompany Atulai, that's Mahapurna's daughter, you accompany her back to her in-law's home and you do the service. Brilliant scholar. Go do menial service. So it was, yes, Guru Maharaj, and he went. He spent a whole year. Not just, you know, scrubbing the floors and washing the dishes and just anything, everything, just like a house servant. Dasarathi, brilliant scholar. The family didn't know who he was. Just until I came back with somebody who was going to do all the service. And he did it so well, they had no complaints. Took care of the barn and the cows and every little thing. Everything. Then one day, Vaishnava came to town in that village where they lived, and he was giving some discourse on the scriptures. And Dasarathi was in the audience. And as he was hearing, he heard a tinge of impersonalism. And in that tinge of impersonalism, having been trained by Ramanujacharya, politely, patiently, he raised his hand and said, "You know, this is not the correct presentation." Vaishnava exploded, because he was proud. "How can you challenge me?" And very calmly, politely, Dasarathi systematically presented the teachings that he had heard from Ramanujacharya, passing on that message. And the assembly could immediately understand, whoa, this isn't just like a little menial servant person over here. This is, who are you? And he said, "My name is Dasarathi. I'm a disciple of Ramanujacharya." "You're Dasarathi. You're Dasarathi. And you're doing this menial service at Atulai's in-law's home." Immediately, the in-laws were panic-stricken. This qualified person is doing all this service in our home. So they went and spoke to him and said, "Dasarathi, you can't do this. We can't allow you to do the service." And his answer was, "It's the order of my spiritual master. It's my life and soul. I can't do anything other than my life and soul." He said, we can't allow this. So they went to Ramanujacharya. They went all the way from their village to Sri Rangam and pleaded, "Ramanujacharya, take away this instruction. His life and soul, change it. Please do something." So Ramanujacharya left Sri Rangam and went to their village and embraced his disciple Dasarathi and instructed him in the confidential internal meaning of what it means in pure devotion to be fully surrendered to the personality of Godhead. When one's heart is genuinely humble, a phrase that I commonly use, it's like a little sutra, packed, you unpack it and it's this message, mood of humble service, not circumstantially dictated, but genuinely at the heart level, humble servant, the order carrier of the instruction of my spiritual master. Without that humility, what good is instruction? It'll be misunderstood or misused, or it'll bounce and just like a ball hitting a wall and just go somewhere else. Won't be effective. The heart has to be in that mood of wishing to carry out service. There's a little advertisement or a notice here. One of those things we hate to do. But somebody parked their car in the alley, and the police here tow cars, and ticket them first, and then they tow them if they're in the alley. So somebody put one in the alley. It's a Honda with a license plate number 487NVX. So if that's you, your car may still be there, and I'd recommend you do something about it. Okay. To receive instructions, to be qualified to receive instructions, there has to be the proper mood of service, willingness in any circumstances to take a humble service position and a humble service mood and carry out whatever the instructions of the spiritual master are that the circumstance requires. One other point is when you're carrying out a service in that mood, it's a person that you're serving. Not just doing something and get, you know, put a little mark by your name. Okay, I did that service, and I get an A in my report card. It's you're serving a person. Very nice example of this. For me, it's very meaningful. When Hriday Chaitanya, very, very wonderful disciple, or devotee of Lord Chaitanya, sent one of his disciples, Duki Krishnadas, to go study under Jiva Goswami in Vrindavan. When Duki Krishnadas reached Vrindavan, he was very much appreciative of Jiva Goswami. He wanted to do some personal service for Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami didn't want to accept personal service. So he said instead, although Jiva Goswami was given personal service by Rupa Goswami to prepare the leaves upon which he did his writing. Humble service. Jiva Goswami didn't want to accept any personal service. He said instead, there's my, near the Radha Damodar temple, there's a place, a kunj, where a grove where Radha and Krishna perform their evening pastimes together. Now, how many places have you been in Vrindavan? If you've been to Vrindavan, Radha and Krishna perform their pastimes here. There's like a zillion of them. He was given some service, take a broom and make the place clean, so when Radha and Krishna come, if the place is clean. So he did the service, but he was doing it. The consciousness was, it's for Radha and Krishna. It's for Radha and Krishna. And he did with that love, serving Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan. Radharani gave him special mercy because of that mood that he was serving Radharani. She left behind an ankle ornament, a golden ankle ornament, one evening when she was performing her pastimes with Krishna. And then there's detail. She sent Lalita disguised to retrieve the ankle ornament that Duki Krishna found when he was cleaning. And when he, just by touching it, he picked it up, when he touched it, he felt ecstatic, love of God. This isn't just an ankle ornament. Whoever owns this ankle ornament, I want to meet that person. And when Lalita came, there's the whole story, but he was brought directly before Srimati Radharani in his spiritual body because he wanted to meet Radharani. He wanted to meet the person that owns this ankle ornament. And she touched the ankle ornament to his forehead, blessing him, and gave him a spiritual name. Your name is Shyamananda. And this mark formed a special tilak mark. And you have my blessing to have my eternal service. Even in his temporarily in his present body. So return back to Vrindavan and carry on with your service. Because he was doing this, we also get a service assigned to us. Prabhuji, can you clean the temple room? Or after the feast, there's a lot of pots. Can you wash, spend a little time cleaning the pots? Some service. When you're doing the service, it's not just, okay, so we can get on to the next thing. It's service to Krishna. It's the kitchen is Radharani's place. And it's not just, that's a nice thing to say. It's Radharani's place. It's where she serves Krishna from the kitchen. When we went to Tirumala, one of the, those of you that are Sri Vaishnavas, you may know, in Srinivasa's pastimes, there was a woman that was assigned to assist him, Bakula, who is none other than an expansion of Mother Jasoda, You know where the deity of Bakula Devi is? She's overlooking the kitchen. There's a little hole in the wall. Her altar is looking through the hole in the wall, is looking into the kitchen. She's supervising the activities of the kitchen. And in the kitchen is Radharani, or Radharani's expansion. And one is assisting, that's the consciousness. If one is going to get out of the four walls of the material universe and into the spiritual realm, one has to enter the mood of serving the divine couple or serving those who are representing the divine couple, and you're serving them in a very personal way. And hearing is also in a very personal way. We shared this upstairs, we'll say it again. When you're reading one devotee, they're not here in this room, but one devotee was describing to me once, I really have a hard time reading Bhagavad Gita. I just like can't get into it. I read it, I read the verse, I read a page, and read it five times and nothing goes in. What should I do? I said, don't just read it like it's an academic text. Read in the following way. Krishna is speaking to you. And in the purport, Prabhupada is speaking to you. He knows the condition that you're in, and he's speaking to you. Read it in that way and see what happens. Within 2 weeks, the devotee replied or wrote and said, that's powerful. I can, you know, I'm really appreciating reading Bhagavad Gita. Or, I hope Swati doesn't mind that I embarrass her publicly here, but we were doing our sharing at the end of the yatra in South India, and one of the points that Swati was sharing, you shared it earlier, I'm just repeating it. I felt throughout the whole yatra, Maharaj, that you were speaking to me. Not that you looked at me and said, Swati, this particular message pays special attention because it's for you. I didn't do that, she said. But she felt that I was speaking to her. She made a point, as she's doing right now, sitting right up front and hearing very attentively and personally, receive the message personally. It's not just, you know, one person in the room, it's for her and not for anybody else. You just are add-ons and really not important people. Only she's important. Not that. Hearing should be done in that way. It's a personal message. I can honestly say, as I'm speaking, in many cases I'm thinking and making a particular point very quickly, like different circumstances that devotees are passing through in their lives. And the point is, in fact, person-specific or categories of person-specific that are struggling in the current time frame with a particular thing. But then it doesn't have to be one particular devotee. When it comes to questions and answers, those kinds of things, it's good to ask them publicly, because if you're going through something, chances are there's like a dozen or so other people going through the same thing. We just like to keep our stuff private, so okay. But here, personally, receive personally. And when that personal communication, when there's a relationship where you understand, even if you don't, like, you know, what's your personal relationship with Prabhupada if you're a second generation devotee? I never met Prabhupada. But he's speaking to you. He wrote his book specifically for that reason, that after his physical departure, he could still speak to people, knowing what we're passing through. Not just like, you know, knowing from the scriptures what Kali Yuga is like, knowing from practical experience what Kali Yuga is like. What are the things that we're addressing in our modern circumstance? And addressing it, and giving an instruction that can carry us out of that struggle. Personal. That's how we should hear. We serve a person and we hear in a personal way. And when you serve personally, very important. You're protected by that relationship of a loving exchange with the person who you're serving and hearing from. You're protected. How does that work, that you're protected? In short, in principle, it engages you in the internal potency. And when you're in the internal potency, you're protected from the external potency. It's not like the external potency just like stops, goes to sleep. Kali Yuga is advancing, but it doesn't affect you. You can be in the midst of a Kali Yuga circumstance and it doesn't enter, doesn't penetrate, doesn't attract or repulse. You can see maybe something, you know, irreligious and something that you would never participate in, but you're protected because you won't step outside of that internal potency because of that loving relationship. It's the loving relationship means this is something that would be pleasing to Krishna, that's something that would not be pleasing to Guru and Krishna. There's no question of you participating in it. You're protected by service and the loving relationship. We need protection in this age of Kali. We all need protection in this age of Kali. It's a vicious age. Whew. Beware. It's a very vicious age. Don't stay right in the middle of the road. Don't go to the left or to the right, because very quickly you're in the ditch. And it's very nasty in the ditch. And very quickly it happens. One can be in the middle and just a little off and then in the ditch. Very quickly. So stay protected by allowing the instruction of the spiritual master to enter your heart. And then you can't be deviated. So what if instructions don't enter in the heart? Because our hearts are hard. Like Dhruva said to Narada, your instructions are all very good, but it doesn't enter my heart. He said like that specifically. Because I want a kingdom. I want a big kingdom. Not only my father's kingdom, better than my father's kingdom, better than my father's kingdom, better than my father's kingdom. I want a kingdom. Your instructions don't enter. My heart is hard. So how do we make our hard hearts, that instructions don't go in, soft, so instructions can go in? That example with Dhruva is very valuable instruction of what made the difference, how his heart became soft instead of hard. When Narada conceded, this boy is very determined, I will then give him instruction. And he gave him instruction. Narada followed the instruction so perfectly, but it wasn't just following the instruction. What entered his heart, what softened his heart, was recognizing that he had been given something that only a person as qualified as Narada could give him, the means to contact Lord Vishnu, which would fulfill his desire. But the feeling of gratitude, I've said this so many times, but there's no end to saying it again and again and again. Because there was this feeling of gratitude, it softened his heart and drove away the material desire. It eclipsed the illumination, drove away the darkness of that which was making his heart hard. We can experience the same thing ourselves. Let's recognize that with the descending mercy that comes from valuable instruction, we have the means to get out of our stuck position, get out of our material contamination, which alone we can't do. Even with the instruction. It's the mercy that accompanies the instruction. Feel gratitude for that mercy that comes, however ill-equipped we may feel ourselves to carry out the instruction. That gratitude softens the heart. And the instructions can then go in and more and more and completely enter the heart. With that, we get spiritual strength to carry out the instruction. I'll end with this. When we were personally, from the last month that I passed before these two yatras, there was like some number of days, almost a week of preparing. It was like morning till night and morning till night and morning till night of hearing. And then 3 weeks of hearing and chanting. And there was so much hearing and chanting, there was no room for anything. I mean, almost anything. Got a virus twice, so there was time for sleeping because my body was a mess. But there was, and those that were taking part in the yatra also, between these wonderful kirtans and going to see the deities and hearing the topics of the wonderful devotees and being in these holy places, it was so powerful. Personally, I felt like the creeper of devotion was just swelling and growing and expanding, and there was like a spiritual high that nothing entered. It was just exhilarating. And devotees were sharing, wow, this is what our Krishna consciousness should be all the time. But we have our worldly duties, so we had to come back and go to work or go to school and take care of our families or something or something. I had to come back and do my GBC stuff and so many other things. So we have our duties in this world, but those duties in this world don't become an encumbrance or an obstacle if we're properly hearing. Regularly hearing. And strongly hearing. Eagerly hearing. We get spiritual strength so that we're protected. We can carry out the duties that we have to carry out in Krishna consciousness and not subjected to the allurements of sense gratification and deviation from the instructions of the spiritual master, because we're weak if we're engaged properly in hearing. We're protected. We're given spiritual strength and enormous, incredible mercy. The process works. We just have to apply it sincerely and continue to apply it sincerely, whatever shortcomings we have. Gradually, by the strong process of bhakti, they'll be uprooted. We need to do some work in uprooting them. But where there's some faith and we can properly receive and serve and enter into the relationship that we have with, available to us from our spiritual master, and ultimately that means our relationship with Krishna as well, we're on the path back to Godhead. It's exhilarating. It works. It's very effective. So, descending, our process is a descending process. Descending mercy, descending instructions, and receive them. Allow them, consciously allow them to enter your heart and fill your heart and serve according to those instructions received. Don't deviate from them. Take them as your life and soul. Don't pretend, but be the person who carries out those instructions. Be very vigilant in that regard, and spiritual success is included. The empowerment to carry out the instruction is included. Everything is there within the instruction. That's where descending mercy comes into our lives. Hare Krishna. I think I took more time than I was supposed to, but I'll end there. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.